have a huge weekend of World Cup qualifiers coming our way. The USA take on Jamaica, a place where they've stumbled before. And a man who's going to take a look at his thoughts on the US men's national team this weekend is a man that we love having on World Football Daily. He is former Columbus Crew, former Real Salt Lake, and former LA Galaxy star, not to mention a former US men's national team player. Mr. Brian Dunseth joining us here on WFD. Brian, how are you doing today, mate?
Fantastic. Yourself?
We are very well and absolutely honoured to have you on, man. Your former clubs kind of speak for themselves. You are a fantastic footballer, obviously doing your sports commentary now, so you get to have kind of voice your opinions week in, week out on this US men's national team. Compared to the last World Cup qualifiers that we saw with the hubbub about the lack of unity in the US men's national team camp, going into this game against Jamaica and the qualifiers coming up, everything seems a lot more settled, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we're not hearing any of the conversations surrounding the unity or what's going on inside the locker room or questioning Jurgen's tactics. I think that's a credit to Jurgen's personality and his relationships with the press. I think if this were results underneath Bob Bradley, everyone would be calling for his head, but somehow Jurgens has the ability to voice his opinions, the direction that he wants to take the club, and try to get his philosophy out publicly. And, you know, outside that one article, which I thought was a very fair, well-written article, I haven't really seen too many big-time, I guess, public writers, sports writers, soccer writers really go after Jurgens. Maybe the way he would be going after if he was in any other country than the United States.
I mean, Jurgen has had an up and down kind of road here with the U.S. men's national team. He didn't play a competitive game, a World Cup qualifier game, or anything apart from really a friendly for the first almost 12 months of his reign. And when they came thick and fast, and they struggled. Do you think that the fact that any other manager will be under more pressure than Jurgen is right now is that a positive thing for the U.S. men's national team, or do you think that makes Jurgen's life maybe a little too easy and he's let off the hook slightly?
I think he's always going to be left off the hook. I think because he's the first U.S. head coach that we've had that's really been a player, a successful player. You know, he's won at all levels. I think as a coach, you know, he rode the success of Germany hosting the World Cup and parlayed that into success at the World Cup with Germany. I think it's pretty obvious he stumbled when coaching at Bayern Munich, but since coming to the U.S., I think for Jurgen, the difficulty is because he's so outgoing and he's so press friendly, you know, that he promised substance, he promised style, he promised identity, he promised philosophy, and you know, a couple of years on, I'm not sure we've seen all of that. We've seen mixed results. We've seen some great results in Mexico and in Italy, but I shudder to think what the results would look like if we didn't have Tim Howard in goal. That being said, he's identified new talent. There's fresh blood. But with fresh blood, that means pushing out some of the older veterans. And I still, to this moment, think that Carlos Bocanegra and Landon Donovan are two players that absolutely should be in that camp. Just for the only reason of raising the level of the competitive nature and having two very, very, very experienced players inside the locker room to make sure these young players, these new players to the United States national team, understand what's ahead of them. Because without that experience, I think you go in blind in a couple certain situations, and I think we've seen that based on some of the results.
Going into the last few World Cup qualifiers, there was questions. Obviously, Landon was still on his hiatus away from soccer in general. He was just about returned to the LA Galaxy when the last World Cup qualifiers came about. Do you think this is more of a punishment for Landon for going on that hiatus to be left out of the squad?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do. I think that, you know, if we were going to call in players based on merit, based on form, you know, then Stu Holden and Brett Shea would never be involved in the national team right now. And I love Stu. Stu's a good friend of mine. I think Brett Shea has a huge upside. But if we're going to hold people accountable and we're going to send messages, then I think you got to make sure those messages are very clear and not mixed. Because calling in Stu and calling in Brett, I think for me, sends mixed messages. And it makes it seem like these are personal issues rather than footballing issues. again, I think that both Carlos and Landon have plenty to give. I don't think in any way, shape, or form does that hinder or slow down the development of players like Matt Beasley or Omar Gonzalez, even a Graham Zusi. I think what that'll do is that'll force the competition level higher to where players don't know if they've locked down a starting 11. Because as of right now, outside of Brad Guzan, Jermaine Jones, Michael Bradley, Josie, Clint, I mean, you look at that spine of the team, and you know, I don't think anybody knows what the back line looks like. I know what we look like in goal. Outside of our central midfield diamond and Josie up top, I'm not sure what we look like. And I think that's, you know, for ex-players that you know, have played the game, that know the dynamics of locker room, you know, that those are scary issues for us as ex-pros watching and wondering out loud, you know, what is this next three-game series going to look like? Because, you know, you take the win against Costa Rica, you take that off the table. It's a great 3 points, but you can't judge that performance just based on the snow. You've got hardworking MLS-based kids that gets a great result on the road in Mexico for a Mexican team that's stumbling. But after the results for Mexico, the 3 points the other night, now the U.S. has dropped into that fourth place. And you know, that's not once you're out of that top three qualifier, and you still look at Honduras, who are sitting just a minus one goal differential, but the same amount of points. You know, these five teams, you know, these five teams in this group, I think are, number one, don't get enough credit for how good they are. But number two, there's no freebies. There's no team that you can say as of right now, based on performance, the previous four games played, that, okay, they're going to the World Cup.
For Tim Howard especially, you mentioned that we don't really know the back four, and we've seen so many changes throughout this back four over the last 12 to 18 months or so for the U.S. men's national team. Is that making Tim Howard's job a lot more difficult? Because, you know, he needs to be able to trust that back four that's in front of him, and if there's so many changes, does it make it harder, do you think, for a goalkeeper to be able to trust his defense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, the biggest question we've had over the past 6 years was, who was our left back? I mean, we went through Eddie Lewis, went through DeMarcus Beasley, Carlos Bocanegra, Eric Lehigh. We thought Fabian Johnson was going to be there for a while. Jonathan Bornstein had a cameo there as well. Then you knew it was Gooch, it was Carlos Bocanegra, and then Stevie Tarantula. Now, I understand that those three players that I named are, you know, hitting their 30s and going on the wrong side of the 30s. But the identification process, I think, is the difficult one, because, you know, we can say all we want about playing these friendlies against El Salvador and Guatemala and, you know, how important they are. But at the end of the day, I think we need to be very open and honest about there's two different U.S. men's national teams. There's a CONCACAF men's national team, and then there is a World Cup men's national team. And the players that you differentiate between those two teams are drastically, drastically different based on experience and results. I think right now, I love seeing Beasler and Omar, the two center backs, playing together. I don't understand why Clarence Goodson is still in there. I mean, if he's in there, I think Bocanegra and Guccianiello should definitely be in there because there's no long-term future with Goodson. I think Jeff Cameron and his play at Stoke has proven that he deserves a chance to play it right back. Brad Evans, I thought, had a great cameo against Germany. But in the two games that we've played against Belgium and Germany, these past two friendlies, we've given up seven goals at home. That is a very scary thought as we go into probably the three most important games in qualifying that we're going to have here in the immediate future.
I was going to mention the two friendlies against Germany and Belgium because, you know, this is a Belgium side that everybody is lauding, saying it is their golden generation, and it wasn't the best German side that they could have fielded, but it's still an impressive Germany lineup that came up. But the US has been so good on home soil over the last few years. Do you think the fact that they got the win against Germany has really kind of hidden over the cracks, and that big crack is that there were plenty of goals conceded?
Absolutely, absolutely, and listen, there are very few bigger U.S. men's national team supporters than myself. I bleed for that jersey. You know, full disclosure, when I was at the Olympics and I was able to lead out our team against Chile in the bronze medal match, there was never a better feeling in my life since that moment outside the birth of my children. So that's full disclosure. Outside of that, it's you know, I think it's time to be a little bit realistic with where we're at. And that's nothing personal against Jurgen. It's nothing personal against the players. I think we've got a solid group of players. But at the same time, you know, when we're playing basically what alludes to a German second team that's being congratulated for their performances in the Bundesliga, and you know, we're getting laid on 540 some passes. We're less on possession at home, especially with that humidity in DC. This is pretty much considered one of probably our strongest team. I think the question mark was Brad Evans at right back. Outside of that, I think that was probably our strongest team that Jurgen has at this moment. You know, and we're less than 43% possession in the game. I mean, those are areas for concern. Now, the positive is that Josie and Clint are clicking, and they're really, really clicking. The fact that Michael Bradley, for me, is the best player on the field every single time he takes the field for the U.S. team. I mean, those and Timmy Howard, I think, is still at the top, you know, at the top level. So I think we've got four or five players that, again, are very, very experienced in international competition that are the leaders of this group. I think they set the tone day in, day out, and those are the positives. But again, the negatives are when you're getting laid seven goals in two games at home. You know, those are real big areas of concern, especially when you go into these tricky tests, you know, on the road against Jamaica and then at home against Panama and Honduras.
It was a tricky test last time the U.S. were in Jamaica. They lost 2-1, of course, in Kingston. And Jamaica, though, since then, have only won one game against Antigua and Barbuda in the World Cup qualifiers. Aside from that, it's been a handful of draws and majority of losses in this kind of 12-month period or so. Do you think this is going to be as easy, as much of a walk in the park as some U.S. men's national team fans are suggesting? Because Jamaica have had this poor run of form and the US are coming off the back. There's a lot of excitement still coming off the back of this Germany thing. Or would you be would you not be surprised if Jamaica were able to come away with 3 points tonight at home?
I think this is probably the trickiest test out of the three games they're going to play. And I'll tell you why. Number one, you have the Jamaican players that are based in Major League Soccer that have something to prove. Number two, I think Theo Whitmore has brought in you know, English, German, anything that now kind of mimics what we've seen with the U.S. men's national team, guys that have dual citizenship capabilities, that have international experience. And outside, you look at that group the other night that lost 1-0 against Mexico, and, you know, they weren't that bad. I mean, I think when you create 12 corner kick opportunities, you're doing something pretty decent offensively. Ryan Johnson's on a tear right now playing for the Portland Timbers. Darren Maddox coming off the bench, and he's been the most dangerous player outside Kenny Miller for the past 2 years at Vancouver. Javon Watson, for me, was kind of the surprise starter for Jamaica the other night, just based on his form hasn't been that consistent with FC Dallas. And then Donovan Ricketts, when you have his size, his strength in goal, the intimidation factor just goes through the roof. So you've got four MLS-based players that played significant minutes. But outside that, this is not the old-school Jamaica we're used to seeing where you recognize names and faces. You've got, you know, outside of Jermaine Hugh and Rodolphe Falston, there's not a lot of other names that people identify with. So I think that's blind optimism, that people think we're just going to go into Jamaica and play and win. I've played on that surface. I've been there. I've been in the office. The surface is bumpy. The ball doesn't settle as quickly. They're a very, very direct team with an incredible amount of speed and athleticism. And if you're not careful, set piece opportunities, corners, counterattacks, getting stretched, I think all of those things are very easily, I think very, very difficultly dealt with, but very easily capitalized on for Jamaica, especially at home, knowing that their back's against the wall. They're only sitting on 2 points, and for them to get, you know, 3 points, they put themselves back in contention for that automatic qualifier spot.
I'm sure the US will be pleased once this game in Jamaica is over to get out with some points and get back home to play Panama coming up next Wednesday. Brian, we've got to have a very brief chat quickly about the Major League Soccer, seeing as we've got you on here. Obviously, your US soccer knowledge is way beyond the bounds of mine. But in the last few weeks, we've been seeing the New England Revolution starting to play some really nice football. It all came to a head with that fantastic win against the LA Galaxy last weekend. The two players that are being lauded at the moment, Juan Agudelo and Diego Fagundes, are these two players that New England can kind of revolutionise and build their team around now, having these two impressive youngsters playing this sort of football?
Well, I think that's what Jay would like. I mean, Jay ran the risk of changing his formation quite drastically. I think a couple things happened. They were able to sign a very strong, intimidating center back that I think has settled in very well. I think in the midfield, they've slid Kellen Rowe in centrally and played him alongside Lee Wynn. And I think probably the biggest thing for me is Sahir Sin has come back from knee injury, from tearing his ACL at the end of last year. And for me, he was size and strength, 6'4", played at Bayern Munich's reserve team. I mean, this guy was, he was incredibly impressive, great left foot. Diego Fagundes, I just wish the United States could figure out a way to cap these young players and fast-track them for citizenship, much like I wish they would have done with Fabian Espindola, Javi Morales, Hamison Olave, Ozzy Alonso years ago. I think we need to take a page out of Germany's book and a couple of other countries' books that if a player's playing for 3, 4, 5 years in Major League Soccer, there should be a way that we should be able to figure out how to get them citizenship sooner rather than later. Fagundes is an incredibly young, talented player. Super excited to see the direction that he continues to grow. The tricky thing with Agudelo is the reason why New England was able to get him for the cheap is that he's out of contract at the end of the season. I do not expect Juan Agudelo to be in Major League Soccer next year. I think that Glasgow Celtic put in a decent bid for him last year, but MLS was concerned about losing a bright young star. Agudelo has been revitalized by his ability to play with them, with Sahir Sin, Fagundes, kind of a three-prong attack. I think it's worked. But much like we do with a lot of these young, impressive American talents, we've just got to make sure we don't exalt them into being the next Pele, because we unfortunately have plenty of issues trying to make sure that the next upcoming kid who scored 5 or 6 goals is the guy that's going to lead our men's national team for years and years to come. So I think New England's done a great job. I don't expect Juan to be in New England uniform come the start of 2014, but I expect to see them continue to climb up the Eastern Conference, because Eastern Conference this year doesn't look as strong as it should be.
It's been a joy to watch them, and they gave the LA Galaxy a real ripping, as I said, last weekend. And the Galaxy have been struggling as well recently. Just quickly, Brian, and I promise this will be the last question, because we've kept you on for far too long.
No problem.
But
always enjoy talking with you.
But the Galaxy are really kind of losing their funk at the moment. They started so well. Mike McGee had that great start to the season. They've traded him, of course, away for Robbie Rogers. What's causing this little funk at the LA Galaxy? Because it's nowhere near as bad as the season start was last year, but it seems to be really kind of starting to get into the mind of the players, and they're really losing that confidence at the moment.
I would say it's a couple things. I think one, anytime you start off in the CONCACAF Champions League, I think the expectations from the get-go, you know, the pressure's on there for you to perform at a high level going up against Mexican clubs that are mid-season form. That's always been a difficulty for Major League Soccer. I think, too, we realized, especially during that 5-0 something, how important Mike McGee, Omar Gonzalez, and Robbie King were to that starting 11, how vital they were. I understand from Mike McGee's perspective, the ability to go home, be back where, you know, you have your family is, how important that is. I think once Robbie Rogers rounds the full form and fitness, I think he has the capability of mimicking what he did in 2008 and 2009 with the Columbus Crew and Guillermo Faro Schelotto, especially with Landon, Jossie Zardes, Robbie Keane, Juninho, all those guys. I think that he will round into some pretty impressive form. And then with Josie Zardes and Robbie Keane up top. I think Landon drops into the midfield. You got Juninho, you got Sarvis, Robbie Rogers. I think they'll be looking fine. I think the big question is, what additions can they make during the summer transfer window, and do they run the risk of losing Omar Gonzalez for free at the end of the year, or do they look to capitalize on him knowing that his contract's up? I don't see Omar being a designated player for the LA Galaxy. He could potentially be a designated player for another team, much like Shalrie Joseph was for New England and Chivas. But I think this is just what happens. You get past that early excitement of competing, and then you get into the grind of MLS. And I think for LA, more than ever, I think last year's results really afforded them a different kind of confidence that they don't really care about early season results, just as long as they're close enough to be there. But I think the biggest loss for them, to be honest with you, is Josh Saunders in goal. You give up a goalkeeper that's played in 3 out of the last 4 MLS Cups, and you bring in Carlo Cudicini, who for me has been very, very average. I was shocked that Bruce would run the risk of bringing in the player and replacing Josh Saunders with a guy who has only been playing in reserve league matches in England, basically, since he left Chelsea, excuse me. So I think that could be a bigger issue than any expected come the end of the season. But in the meantime, it's Bruce, and he'll figure it out. And if there's one coach that'll never panic in the face of a long MLS season, it's Bruce Arena.
I mean, we saw that with Josh Saunders last year, though, didn't we? When Josh was out for an extended period of time, and the Galaxy, around about this time last year, I think it was, really struggling without him leading that back line. And as you say, to bring in a reserve keeper just did seem a little bit baffling. It was sold on the name, perhaps, at LA more than anything else with Carlo.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's what's to be expected when you're in a club like LA or a club like New York, is, you know, there's going to be times where you're leaning towards star power. You're leaning towards experience. You know, the player's pedigree itself. But, you know, again, that's a group, that's a team that has an incredible amount of money in the coffer, and, you know, how they go out and spend it. And, you know, you look at Jack McBean, Jose Villarreal, and Jossi Zardes, all players that can kind of hide underneath the homegrown status and not count against the salary. So I guess if they're going to run the risk to spend some money and maybe burn a couple hundred thousand, I guess having that type of pedigree that Cudicini has is worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it's all up to how you approach, what's the dynamic in the approach for the locker room and for the salary cap between Bruce and Chris Klein.
And I guess one thing you always know with the talent pool that the LA Galaxy have is they'll probably end up being there and thereabouts in the playoffs at the end of the season as well. Brian, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you on the show today. I apologise for taking up so much of your time, but we always love it when you come on with such detailed expert analysis of Major League Soccer and the US men's national team. Enjoy the weekend of World Cup qualifiers and MLS soccer, mate. And I hope for your sake alone that the US can pull something out against Jamaica this weekend, man.
Appreciate it. Anytime you guys need me, give me a shout. You know I'm always around.
Hey, thanks very much, Brian. We will definitely take you up on that. Brian Dunseth joining us here on World Football Daily, former Columbus Crew, former RSL and former Los Angeles Galaxy star man, joining us here on WFD's Talk All Things US Men's National Team and Major League Soccer. Here on WFD's Talk All Things US Men's National Team and Major League Soccer.